are on the line. Live on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga, and in Auburn on ESPN 106.7, or online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. You are on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw. Join the show by calling in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
You're on the line on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Happy Monday, everybody. I'm back live in the studio, free from the illness that befell me last week. Good to be back live in the studio. And as I promised on Tuesday's show, before I got out of here, I made sure to leave everybody with a teaser about what Monday's show was going to have for everybody. And it's a new co-host, Jacob Goins, joining me on the line now from here out. Jacob, how's it going today, my man?
It's going great, man. I really appreciate you bringing me in. I'm really excited to get started. What a Monday. What a birthday present you gave me today. Texted me last night to bring me in for day one. So I'm excited to get started, man.
Jacob, of course, just an introductory for everybody out there. Tell everyone about yourself as we get into a new era of On the Line.
Well, so I'm a senior at Auburn University. I'm graduating in the summer, this summer coming up in August. This is my last semester of school this spring, and luckily, Auburn Network, I'm coming in to join the team, and I'm going to be working here from here on out part-time and then hopefully full-time throughout the summer. That'll complete my graduation requirements and work here for an extended amount of time in the next few years and just learn whatever I can do. So I'm graduating from Auburn. And I work with Weagle, our student radio station there, doing sports broadcasting, play-by-play, and color commentary, doing that. So that's what I love to do. I love to be on the radio, and man, what an opportunity it is to come in here to Auburn Network. So excited to finish out my time at Auburn and get started on my career.
Well, I'm excited to have you here, my man. And once again, that's Jacob Goins. Be sure to give us a call today, 334-321-1390. That's how you can call into the show. We want to hear from you. Give a happy birthday wish to Jacob. Give him well wishes. Say hello to him for the first time, as well as talk to us about anything going on in the sports world. 334-321-1390 is the number to call. It is great to be back in the studio. And we're going to open up the show today talking about Auburn football announcing a flurry of defensive coaching staff changes right before the Auburn-Kentucky game. And I do not wish to have been someone that had to actually write articles and cover those hires right before that momentous occasion of a basketball game with Jungle City on the outside and the jungle on the inside. And what a great basketball game it was. I did not envy anybody that had to write about those hires that was so conveniently placed right before that basketball game. You know why they did it. But a lot of people on social media, this is something that I've been seeing, there are folks out there, once again, anything negative or anything that could be perceived as negative with this Auburn football program, there are people coming out of the woodworks, whether it be on social media or in person, saying that things aren't going well right now with the Auburn program. I'm not buying that, but is the turnover with the defensive staff a sign of problems with Brian Harsin's tenure just a little over a year in?
I don't see it as a problem. And as you mentioned before, they did it an hour before the tip-off of the biggest game in Auburn Arena history. They did that for a reason, because now people, they were focused on basketball, the number one team in the nation, by the way, and now they can make those giant moves and Brian Harsin wouldn't get any, you know, get any hate for it. He even went to the game. It was with the students in the student section. They did that for a reason, obviously, but I don't see it as a negative sign. I really don't. I think Brian Harsin's doing what he wants to do. He's running his program, and he wasn't happy with what was going on, so he made some changes.
I completely agree with that. I think this is clearly a staff and a roster that is becoming more and more in the vision and the image of what Brian Harsin wants it to look like. And here's my take on people trying to bring up that there are problems or trying to stir up drama right now with the program. People want to act like they know something when they don't really know something. Sure, you can make a prediction, you can guess, but I think people are inferring and drawing conclusions about something that's not really there right now, or you don't know for a fact if it's there or not. I think everyone right now really just needs to pump the brakes and see what this thing looks like in year two, because now it is becoming more and more of Brian Harsin's thing. This is going to be fully his guys, no longer guys that he hadn't worked with in the past, like Mike Bobo and Cornelius Williams and Derek Mason. He hadn't worked with those guys before. He brought those guys in for the Southeastern flair, for the Southeastern experience on the staff in order to be able to build relationships and build inroads in the Southeast to help him from a recruiting standpoint and also learn the Southeastern Conference. It's clear that those relationships, after 1 year, that just didn't work out. And that's okay that those things didn't work out, but I don't think that you can fully draw a conclusion that it spells disaster within the Auburn program or that this experiment is going to result in a disaster just because those two hires or a couple of hires haven't worked out after 1 year, especially with people that he's never worked with before. And if you'll remember, when Brian Harsin was hired, folks did talk about how tough he was to work with. How there was happy Brian Harsin and there was the mean Brian Harsin, right? When things weren't going well. And things were not going well at the end of the year. And so I imagine he was probably pretty difficult to work with. And I don't mean that as a negative whatsoever. I'm just saying sometimes it's a little too hot in the kitchen for folks and this isn't the right place for them.
And that's Brian Harsin's mentality. And that's how he coaches football. That's how he runs a program and a team, because that's what he wants to do. He wants to make this his team, his program. And it's the same way for players and for the coaches on the staff. Buy in or get out. That's what I've seen when it comes to Brian Harsin. And so here's the thing about it. This is year two. It's only his second
year. It's not even year two yet.
Exactly. Not even year two. He's got one season under his belt. But he noticed problems, and he's nipped them right there. And he got out, and he said, this isn't going to work. Whereas we could see in previous regimes of this Auburn football program where there's problems that build and they just kept building and nothing ever happened or came out of it. But Brian Harsin, in my opinion, again, I don't know, but it seems like when he doesn't like something or where the direction it's going, he ends it right then and there. And I like how they did it with Derek Mason, where they didn't fire him and he didn't necessarily quit. He stepped away, kind of a, you know, not so much of a mutual thing, but he stepped down.
Well, he's got rumors out there that he's going to be a DC elsewhere, right? Like, he was being linked to several jobs.
Yeah. What was it? Oklahoma State?
Oklahoma State seemed to be the front runner among some other names that were thrown out there.
Right. And so, on that front, it didn't seem like it was extremely negative, but you're right. I mean, Brian Harsin, he's probably hard to work with, but that's a good thing. And he demands a lot. If you're an Auburn fan, that's who you want running this program. Because look across the state. It's the same type of attitude who's winning national championships.
He's tough to work with.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what you want for a football program. So, sure, is it scary? There's a lot of turnover? Maybe. But I think it's all for the right reasons. And I do think that Brian Harsin he's doing the right thing, in my opinion.
I like what you said there. Sure, it can be a little scary that there's some turnover. There could be issues. I've mentioned that already. I've said several times at the start of this year, we are at a point in Auburn football where this thing could be going up, this thing could be going down. We are at the fork in the road. The reality is there's no way to predict where this thing's going. It can still turn around in a positive way. It could also be a massive negative down the line. There's no way to predict that, but I like what you said. I think it's being done for the right reasons. I don't think it's being done out of negativity. Am I excited about Derek Mason leaving? No, but I don't think we know fully why he's leaving, and I don't think people should be freaking out about it. Anyone on the outside isn't getting the full picture. The only people that truly know what it's like and what is going on inside that program are the coaches, the players, and the extra personnel, once again, inside that program. Anybody on the outside does not fully know what's going on, because this is a very secretive and a very close-to-the-vest coaching staff and program the way it's being ran right now. I continue to point out all of the key players announcing their return to the program for the 2021 season. There's only been a handful of key players from last year, Bo Nix and Kobe Hudson, that said they're on their way out. And Kobe Hudson was kicked off the team, wanted to be back. And Bo Nix, look, there's a lot of rumors and discourse about why Bo Nix left. But regardless, there's been more key players and more veterans announcing that they want to return than the guys saying that they want to leave. To me, that's a sign of a good culture, that these guys are bought into what Brian Harsin is doing right now. I don't believe there's a culture issue. This is normal for programs going through a culture shift. There's going to be roster attrition. There's going to be staff attrition. It's just sometimes it just doesn't work out. And this all wasn't going to happen overnight. The culture wasn't just going to set in overnight. Some people are going to say, hey, let's give this thing a shot. And then it didn't work out for them, and now they're on the way out, whether it be a coach or a player. And I think you're seeing this second wave right now of guys leaving the program.
I like that you brought that up, because that's what I was going to talk about, was all of the players that have bought in to what Brian Harsin is selling. I said it before, and I'll say it again. I think his mentality of Brian Harsin and the way he coaches and runs this program is buy in or get out. But all these guys are buying in. All of our star players for Auburn are star players besides, like you mentioned, Bo Nix, Kobe Hudson. All these guys want to come back, and they want to be a part of what Brian Harsin's building. And that's just after 1 year. So what do you think that means? And it's not that Brian Harsin's just a coach's player, because Gus was a coach's player, or a player's coach. That's what I meant.
Right.
But I think Brian Harsin has such high standards, and that's what these players come to college to get. That's the difference between high school ball and college ball, is the standards that a coach sets for not only a team and a program, but each individual player. I think they want to be a part of that, and that's why they're coming back after just 1 year, and they truly believe that Brian Harsin's the man for the job, and so do I.
Let's head to the phone lines now. 334-321-1390 is the number to call, and we've got Shane on the line with us to start off the show today. Shane, how's it going?
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Doing real well. What's up?
A few things. I just want to say congrats to your new dude. Welcome to the family.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
Yep. Couple things. First off, War Eagle. Number one in the country. What?
That's
number
right.
One. That's awesome. I don't think there's going to be any sort of letdown the games to come just because we're number one. I think Bruce Pearl spins stubbing away. This has never been done. Well, we've never been number one and had to defend anything either. So, you know, I think he works the team in a way that gets them ready for each game because of something that he creates, you know.
He's a motivator.
Something that motivates him. Yep. Anyway, about that, that's awesome. The football thing you guys were talking about, I'm not as optimistic as you guys are on the. And I'm you know me.
That's right,
dude. I'm optimistic guy about football, Auburn football, but it just seems like he's turning it into Boise. I mean, how many of the dudes are from Boise now that are leading the team, and all the defensive guys that stuck around, they did that while Mason was here. So, what happens, you know, in a few days if you know, people are like, well, we stayed because we thought we were getting coached by this guy and not, you know, not this guy. So, you know,
I think we're going to find out. We're going to find out if Derek Mason really was what all these defensive players came back for, because he's not there anymore. But these players played for Schmetting as well. So we're going to see we're going to see how it goes.
I'm not upset that Mason was gone. He was a good coach, but he wasn't stellar. You know, the last five games was just about as bad as I can imagine. The second half of almost every game was just like letdowns. We lost those because of the defense, I believe. But so I'm not you know, worried about that part.
You're just uneasy about the turnover.
I'm just uneasy about the turnover and the fact that he replaced it with someone that he's comfortable with. But I don't know if that's a good thing or if that's a bad thing, because I don't want to be Boise State. You know, I want to beat Georgia. I want to beat Alabama yearly. I want Auburn to be in these conversations like we are in basketball right now. But I don't know. You know, these are my coaches now.
You'll have to root for
get
them.
Behind them, and then see just hopeful. You know, just hope for the best. But did you guys watch the Bills Chiefs game last night?
I was on my way to sleep, still recovering from the sickness, but I have kept up with what happened last night. It was an incredible ball game.
I people are complaining about the defense, but they were gassed by the end. There's so much happened in 2 minutes. 2 minutes, I think 25 points were scored, and I don't know. I've seen a lot of playoff games, and I don't remember one as exciting as that one. It was just like back and forth. I like Mahomes. He's you know, I root for them, but Josh Allen is a phenomenal quarterback. I mean, I think this rivalry is going to be amazing to watch in the years to come. Anyway, guys, that's all I have today. Love the show. Congrats, new dude. War Eagle.
War Eagle to you too as well, Shane. That was Shane on the line with us. Going back to talking about football, his last couple of statements there about Auburn football, that is, not the NFL, but talking about the staff and whatnot and being uneasy about turnover. I get that. I'm not telling anybody that it is wrong to be uneasy about the turnover. Once again, I go back to it's hard to predict what direction this thing's going. This thing could go positive. This thing could go negative. I'm just saying anyone that claims to believe or claims to know that without a shadow of a doubt in their mind that there is negative things going on within that program, I'm not buying it. They don't know.
They don't. And that's the great thing about it is we don't know and we're not going to know until next season and the year after that when the team hits the field. And I'll be honest, when Brian Harsin was hired originally at Auburn and brought so many people from Boise originally, I had the same statement as Shane. I said, I don't want to be Boise. I want to be Auburn. So it's worrisome, and I can see where people are worried about it. But at the end of the day, we don't know until we know.
And the experiment is just getting started, I think. And I've gone to that a lot is, look, Brian Harsin is very particular about what he wants. He's very specific. You noticed that right away. When he came to Auburn, you noticed that right away. Instantly, when he got onto campus, you knew that this guy had a specific taste for what he wanted. And if you didn't reach that demand, then there were going to be consequences. This was not going to fly if you were not meeting his high demands.
He means business.
He does mean business. And I like that. In my football coach, I think he had a particular taste for what the offense and the defense was going to look like. And Shane touched on this a little bit about how the defense kind of trailed off at the end of the year, as well as the offense. Both sides of the football trailed off at the end of the year for particular reasons in their own way, but they both trailed off. And I think the defense played well in the Alabama and Houston games. I think the defense played well. I mean, held Alabama to 10 points in regulation, held Houston to 17. Those were two good offenses. I think it played well in those games, but didn't play awesome in the South Carolina game, didn't play awesome in the Mississippi State game. I thought it was fine in the Texas A&M game, but still, there was a mixed bag of results from both sides of the ball this year all throughout the season. There was inconsistency. It's understandable that when you look back at 2021, you can say, that's probably not what Brian Harsin was looking for. That's probably not what Brian Harsin's vision was for both sides of the ball. And you got that vibe throughout the whole year that there was probably some butting of heads between Brian Harsin and his coordinators all year long.
And I think for a couple years from now, we're going to be able to, I hope, we're going to be able to look back at Brian Harsin in year 3, 4, possibly 5, and look back on year 1, and we're going to notice that he saw these things right now, and he sees the problems already, and he's fixing it right now instead of waiting. And instead of trying to not hurt people's feelings, and because at the end of the day, when somebody gets fired, that's not good because somebody gets fired, but it's a business. At the end of the day, it's a business. And I think he sees the problems now. He's trying to fix them now to help us from years to come. And so I support him. I think he's doing the right thing, but only time will tell.
And to add to that, before we go to break here, my last point about this is, look, Auburn fans wanted this. You asked to move on from Gus Malzahn. Most of them did. I'm not going to speak for everyone out there. There were probably some that wanted to keep Malzahn. There was a decent amount, I'm sure. But there were a lot of Auburn fans, and the program wanted this because they made the decision. The people at B, the decision makers, wanted this. You wanted to roll the dice to see if you could get better than Malzahn. You said, let's give this thing a shot. You made that gamble. Now you've got to let it play out because it's too early to cut this thing loose. You can't move on from Brian Harsin. We've had some callers say, well, this thing's not working out. We need to make a change. You can't fire a guy after 1 year. You can't fire a guy really after 2 years unless year two is just absolutely atrocious, because you're not going to get any good coaches to want to come here knowing that their job security hinges on being able to topple the two greatest dynasties or two of the best dynasties we've seen in the last 20 years. Like, that is not going to, in Alabama's case, ever in college football, right? So nobody wants to come and coach under those parameters, under the intense situation that Auburn is in right now. It's the toughest job to win in the country. It is. I firmly believe that. It is tougher than Kansas for different reasons, but it's tougher.
He has the toughest job in America coaching, I'm telling you. I've said that as well. Auburn fans, have patience. If you can have patience, good things are going to happen, I promise.
Let's take a quick break here on the Line. When we come back, we'll continue to talk about these coaching decisions. What do we actually make of each move? We're going to talk about Jeff Schmetting, Christian Robinson, and Jimmy Brumbaugh. Back on the Line on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama. Phone lines are open. Number to call, 334-321-1390. Come with our new man, a new era of On the Line, Jacob Goins, with me on the show now from here out. Come give him well wishes. Also, a happy birthday to him as well. If you want to call in, 334-321-1390. Went a little long on our previous segment here. We got Jeremy Law coming up at 2:30 p.m. of Radio Alabama Sports. Talk to us a little bit about what's going on with the Alabama Crimson Tide. They got some big wins last week on the hardwood, beating, it was LSU. Yeah, they beat LSU in the midweek, and then they almost lost to Missouri, but they found a way to pull it together and beat Missouri in their second matchup with the Tigers this year back on Saturday. And then the football program got the big transfer commitment of Georgia wide receiver Jermaine Burton. If you're wondering who was going to replace Jameson Williams, it's him.
There he is. And a guy that had good production for the Bulldogs all year long, especially in the semifinal against Michigan. I mean, he had a heck of a game.
I thought he was going to be the dude in the Georgia wide receiver room. But the reality is, I was also thinking that JT Daniels was going to be the quarterback and that Georgia was going to be throwing the football more. And that never materialized because they didn't have to.
And now he's in the portal.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's crazy, man.
Trust me, I wanted the package deal of JT Daniels and Jermaine Burton.
Yeah. Imagine winning a national championship with Georgia and then transferring to Nick Saban in Alabama to go possibly win another one. How crazy is that? And when you're good, you're good. Crazy, though. I didn't expect that at all.
Especially considering that he may not be the number one with George Pickens back, but he's definitely the number two, I think. He's above Kyaris Jackson, but you're going to get your touches. But maybe that's just not the offense that he wants to play in. Maybe he doesn't want to be in the ground and pound, we're going to throw the ball 25 times a game style offense. And at Alabama, guess what? They're not going to throw the ball 25 times. They're going to throw the ball 40 times, even to the chagrin of some Alabama fans out there that want Bill O'Brien to run the football. He's going to throw the ball 40 times a game.
Well, when Bryce Young's your quarterback, you got to throw the ball. And I think that's probably why he's going to Alabama now. Just play one-on-one football, beat your man, and you're going to get the ball. And Bryce Young's going to put it on your number anyway.
And look at the reality. Who's putting out more first-round draft picks at wide receiver, Alabama or Georgia?
Exactly. Alabama all day. So, I mean, he's living the dream, I think. Win a national title with Georgia, go transfer. You're going to be a starter at Alabama for Nick Saban and compete for another title. Good for him.
Going back to talk about Auburn football announcing a flurry of defensive coaching staff changes, we talked a lot in the first segment about is the turnover of the defensive staff a sign of problems. I don't believe it's so. I don't claim to know anything, but it's my belief that it's not. I think people should pump the brakes a little bit. I understand being uneasy about all the turnover, but I think this is Brian Harsin building this thing the way that he wants it, and if you don't fit that vision, you're out, right? And it's clearly not going to work out for you here, whether you leave on your own accord or he makes you leave. You're leaving regardless, right? This thing's going to be the way that Brian Harsin wants it. It's his way or the highway. So let's talk about some of these moves and the move that was made at the top. As Derek Mason steps away, Jeff Schmetting is the DC, and it didn't take long at all. This was exactly what we all expected to happen when we saw the rumors earlier in the week.
And I like it. I mean, you do what you got to do. Derek Mason, he did a fine job. It wasn't the best defense we've ever had. Wasn't the best defensive coaching job we've had.
I think it was an improvement from what Auburn had in 2020, and the statistics don't lie in that.
I agree. And Derek Mason was not trying to undermine a program, if you know what I'm saying. So, you know, I hate to see Mason go because I do like him. I like him as recruiting, and I think the players liked him as well. But we talked about it in the first segment. We're going to talk about it now. Brian Harsin saw a problem, and he ended it right there. He cut it off. Before it got any worse. And it's something that we probably don't know because we're media, fans, whatever.
There may not have even been a problem.
May not have been a problem at all.
It may have just been Derek Mason wanted to go somewhere else. Maybe he liked some of these other programs he was looking to leave. Maybe it just didn't mesh.
Exactly.
Not necessarily that there was a problem, but maybe they just didn't mesh well.
Yep.
And Brian Harsin was like, look, we know you don't want to be here. Let us move on. You move on. Mutual. Let's part ways.
And at the end of the day, I think it was a mutual part ways. Like we talked about before, they didn't fire him. It wasn't breaking news Derek Mason fired from Auburn. It was Derek Mason stepping down as defensive coordinator. So instead of making it a big argument and disagreement, whatever, they just decided to move both ways, or their separate ways. Derek Mason's going to go be a defensive coordinator somewhere else. He's going to get his money, and Auburn's going to try and move on.
I like this move as well. I think Jeff Schmetting was a key and played a key part in defensive game planning as the season progressed. I think Jeff Schmetting was very close to the top on this, and he's got a history as a defensive coordinator. He knows what Brian Harsin's looking for on defense. So if you're talking about culture fit, if you're talking about personality fit for the job, this is exactly what Brian Harsin wants at defensive coordinator. I expect the defense to be more aggressive next year from a blitz perspective because I think that's what you saw as the year went on.
I feel like he had a pretty big hand in the Alabama game and the Houston game. I feel like he was a huge influence on why the defense played lights out in the Alabama game and played a great game in the bowl game against Houston. I really do think he had a major impact. And again, that may be a reason why Derek Mason left. He didn't have the control that he needed or wanted. And maybe Schmetting just did a better job at the end of the day. But I think he had a lot of control in those two games alone. And so far, so good. We're going to see how it goes, especially in the offseason. And I like the promotion. I like the hire. And I think he's going to get it done.
Full-scale search all across college football where everybody's already moved.
And waste a month or two trying to find a guy. We've got a guy within the program, and with all the defensive players coming back like they talked about.
You don't miss a beat on recruiting.
It's right. It's you pick up the very next day. I mean,
exactly.
The day goes on. So I like the promotion, no doubt.
Real quick here, defensive line move, Jimmy Brumbaugh. Formerly of Tennessee, he was an analyst. I can't remember where he was an analyst at this past year, but formerly of Tennessee, the last time he was actually on the field coaching back in 2020. I love Auburn alums. This is an Auburn alum. You understand how to recruit Auburn. You understand the culture at Auburn. You understand how to communicate Auburn to other people. That's why I like Auburn alums on the staff. Now, is it always the best decision to bring Auburn alums in? Maybe not always, but I do like that he is clearly a personality and culture fit with Auburn. Now, some of his background, I think there's some good here, there's some average. In terms of production, from the last time he was coaching at Tennessee held opposing offense to 3.7 yards per carry. Not bad. Not bad at all.
He's all SEC when he played, so he knows what he's doing.
We'll talk more about these hires as the show goes on, but we got Jeremy Law of Radio Alabama Sports coming up. We'll be back.
Stay on the line. More of the show when we come back.
Back on the line, Noah Gardner and Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Heading to the phone lines, we've got Jeremy Law of Radio Alabama Sports with us on the show. Jeremy, how's it going today, my man?
What's going on, guys? Jacob, welcome to the family, man. Glad to have you a part of the show.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. I'm excited to be here and get started.
All right, Jeremy, talking a little Crimson Tide football here with you. Jermaine Burton spurns the Georgia Bulldogs, beats Alabama. He beats Alabama. He does kind of a KD switch here, except KD lost to the Warriors, but had him on the ropes, of course. But still, leaves Georgia, goes to Alabama. What do you make of this?
And wide receiver is it the only position where somebody else can make or break you? Running back, I know you need the whole offensive line unit, but man, if you're Burton and you think that you have to go catch balls next year from Stetson Bennett, who averaged 166 yards per game in the regular season, you're starting to think about your future in the NFL. I mean, you got a lot of touches, you have to have electric plays on tape, people have to see you be physical. And you can't do any of that without the football in your hands. And I saw a lot of Georgia fans bashing the guy. It was kind of funny reading the responses to his Twitter account. But, I mean, I know Georgia beat Alabama in the national title game. I get it. Georgia had an all-time great defense. But next year, dude, they're going to have to score points. I mean, they're losing a lot. I know they got some guys back on defense, but they're not going to be giving up 10 points per game next year. So, I think they're going to have to score a lot of points. I think a lot of Georgia fans were like, oh, man, Stetson Bennett's coming back. They wanted Brock Vandegrift. They maybe see if JT Daniels could play. But Jermaine Burton's probably looking at his NFL future thinking, man, I got to get some touches. I got to get the ball in space. I have to have a reliable quarterback to throw me the ball. And why not catch the football from the reigning Heisman Trophy winner in Bryce Young? So I think that played a lot in his decision. When it came out that Alabama would be a finalist, I was like, okay, you know, Alabama, some other schools were mixed in there. But, man, he takes one visit, and he's enrolled in classes today. So Alabama's got a weapon at wide receiver. I think they were a tad caught off guard that Mechie declared, especially coming off an ACL injury when he was already like a late second-round projection. So they're going to have to need some immediate experience to still get Ja'Cory Brooks and Ajay Hall and JoJo Earl, Christian Leary, Chaz Preston, Isaiah Bond, Kendrick Law, I could keep naming the guys, but they're going to need just a couple guys with some experience to get those young guys going.
Jeremy, this is Jacob here. Is this something that, to the best of your knowledge, that he has started thinking about throughout the season, that he was looking to transfer out of Georgia, or was this kind of a spur of the moment, like Alabama needs the help, I'm pretty good at what I do, let's take the chance?
I think it's. I think that probably in the middle of the regular season last year, you know, Georgia blew a lot of teams out, but it was a ground and pound, ugly style, you know, scoring that 35th point with 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter. It wasn't just, they weren't up 35-0 at half and a lot of games were over. And I think you saw it even the first time that Georgia played Alabama. And you could maybe even make the case that if Jermaine Burton was playing for Alabama instead of Georgia, that Alabama wins that game, especially since John Metchie and J-Mo went out with ACL tears. So I just think that you catch balls from Stetson Bennett all year. I mean, they really targeted Burton a lot in one game. That was the Michigan game, and he had a really good game. I just think it all starts to add up, and you realize there's some teams that have openings. There's a lot of tampering going on even before players get in the portal anyways. Read a story from some anonymous FBS coaches about that today. So you kind of already have some feelers out there of where that you can go and what schools think that you can come in and make an immediate impact. And this guy will make an immediate impact from game number one next year for Alabama. And they're going to need him early because they're going to have to score some points with a lot of new guys on offense against Texas in week two or three.
Before we get to Alabama basketball, I want to ask you about Auburn football. I'm sure you've seen the news that has come out from across the state, at least from where you're at, looking at the Auburn football program and the flurry of defensive coaching staff changes, Derek Mason stepping down. What is your take on what Auburn is doing on the defensive side of the football moving forward?
Yeah, listen, Auburn statistically, man, had really good numbers, and Derek Mason, I think all year coached pretty well, and the Mississippi State game was probably the one that Auburn fans are going to think about the most, the one that got away and giving up, what, 42 in a row or whatever it was at home. But, man, the guy had a good plan against Alabama. The guy had a good plan against a really good offense in Houston. I thought he had a good plan against A&M. I thought Derek Mason had a really good plan, and he had some talent, especially had a really good secondary, Roger McCreary. So they're losing some guys to get guys back like Derek Hall. Who knows? I mean, Derek Mason has been one of the people have thought that he's been one of the best defensive coaches for maybe the last decade. And you lose him to, I wouldn't even say a lateral move. I don't think that, I mean, Auburn's a pretty good program. So I don't know. I mean, we'll see. Brian Harsin, he still has a lot to prove, but he also still has some time to prove it. I mean, the hot seat's not clicking, but if they come out next year and they start giving up a lot of points, Alabama's offense gets back to where it is. They have to go to Alabama and Georgia and Ole Miss and Mississippi State on the road next year. Four teams that look to put up a lot of points. It won't look good if you lose Mason and you roll into those games against your SEC West rivals in Georgia and you don't play well on defense. So there's still a lot out there, but Harsin still has time to prove that he's doing the right thing with his OC change, DC leaving, Schmetting stepping in. So we'll see.
Let's move on to Alabama Crimson Tide basketball. Alabama, big week. I talked to you a week ago on Monday, and you were not so optimistic about the direction this basketball team was going. Now, after beating LSU and Missouri, are you the same? You're a little bit better? Where are you at?
Yeah, I'm about the same. Alabama fans, I get it. They want to tout that LSU win. Dude, LSU's playing without maybe their two best players. And you should have blown them out. They go down and score 12 points on, I think, four possessions, get themselves right back in that game late in the second half. I'm just looking at this team, and Nate Oates is talking about effort and energy. I'm like, dude, you just coached a team to the Sweet 16, probably should have gone further. You have so many guys back. Like, whose job is it to get these guys ready to play? I mean, like, that's your job. You have Jaden Shackelford, Javon Quinterly, Bediako was supposed to be a good big man. J.D. Davidson has not progressed at all from his high school year to his freshman here at Alabama. Like, that's on you, buddy. So you got to get it figured out. And you have played great against Gonzaga and Houston. Nobody, Alabama has two of the best wins in college basketball. They may have if you looked at wins only, take the losses away, Alabama might have the best winning resume in college hoops. But they come out and they lose games that they shouldn't lose, and they play really poorly against Missouri twice. So they've got some things to work on, and I think it falls back on the coaching staff because you know there's talent. A lot of that talent came back from last year's Sweet 16 team. They've got to get better. They've got to play better. They have to play with more energy. They need to rebound better. And, you know, sometimes you have kids, sometimes you have a recruiting class that is, I don't want to say a bust, but sometimes it takes them longer to develop than you'd like. And I think that's a little bit of what you have with this this young Alabama basketball team, especially with a lot of the freshmen that they're running out on the floor.
There's one thing we know about Alabama basketball under Nate Oates, and that is once they start getting hot, they can beat anybody in the country. They have the athletes to do it and the shooters to do it. We haven't seen it this year yet, but I think they can get there. And I'm looking at their schedule. They've got two wins in a row right now. They got Georgia on the road, which should be an easy, smooth win for the Crimson Tide. But then they have number five Baylor at number two Auburn and home for number 12 Kentucky. Is that something you can see Alabama going 2-1 in, or do you think that's 0-3, or did they beat all three? What's your opinion?
It's 1-2 at best. I mean, I think it, just like it took people a while to figure out that Alabama couldn't block anybody in football, you saw it come to fruition against LSU. You just blitz them and they're done. I think teams are starting to realize Alabama doesn't box out. They don't go get a lot of rebounds. They're not making any threes, so just let them shoot them. If they get hot, then you guard, then you come out and guard on them. Didn't they miss 20 threes in a row against LSU, the stat that they put up on the screen? I mean, you're a team that prides yourself in making threes. How do you miss 20 in a row? So they're going to have to shoot better. They're going to have to rebound better, and then they're coming up against three of the, you know, some of the top teams in the country in a row, Auburn, Kentucky, Baylor. I mean, you're already – feeling pretty rough this year when you saw the schedule, knowing you were playing Gonzaga and Houston and Baylor. Now Auburn's number one in America and Kentucky's one. You know, they're always going to be in the top 15, it feels like. So Alabama, I mean, I think they do have the number one strength of schedule in college basketball right now, and they'll probably finish that way too. They need to go 1-2 in those. They need to add some more wins, and they got to stop dropping games that they shouldn't drop. So, if you're an Alabama fan, you stay optimistic. You feel like if you can hit the three ball, if you stop missing 20 threes in a row, you can win a lot of basketball games. And the most basketball games they've lost have been close, which gives you a little bit of hope going down the stretch.
Of course, across the state, Auburn is the number one team in the country as Tiger fans wake up this Monday. And as expected, barring any other catastrophe, that someone would rank Auburn number 9. But I want to ask you this, in terms of the rivalry and where it's at right now, it seemed like, and I said this, and you know, about a year ago to today, I got drug by Alabama Twitter about a year ago with some comments that I made about this being an arms race and how the rivalry is headed to a spot where it's never been before, and how the needle might have swung back in Alabama's way. Is the needle swinging in Auburn's way right now?
I just think you look at recruiting. I mean, Auburn's got a couple lotto picks. Alabama in their 2022 recruiting class, they're probably going to have a couple of lotto picks as well. So this is going to be a back-and-forth battle. I mean, it's the reason why you see Duke be really good one year, lose the guys to the NBA, and then they're pretty average the next year. It just happens. It's the one-and-done culture of this game. It is an arms race. Alabama could have put an end to this arms race if they would have just fired Avery Johnson when they should have and hired Bruce Pearl, who was lined up, ready, wearing a crimson suit, ready to do a press conference in Tuscaloosa before he was hired at Auburn. Bill Battle wouldn't pull the trigger on Avery Johnson, and now Alabama fans have to live with the fact that Bruce Pearl is coaching Auburn to be the number one team in the country, the mountaintop of college basketball. And when you watch this Auburn team, you look at them and you think, they're not getting upset. They're going to be a one seed, and they're not losing to a 16. I mean, if they lose, it'll be Elite Eight or later in the tournament. So just go ahead and stomach yourself, Alabama fans. Get ready. Take your Pepto. Get ready to watch Auburn make another Elite Eight Final Four run, because I told y'all this a couple weeks ago. Jake, I know you weren't here. Maybe Lance was here. Somebody else was hosting the show with Noah. I already thought Auburn was one of the top two teams in college basketball just by watching it. I thought that they were one of the best, and they are. I think they're the best team in college basketball right now. But this is a game where you can lose on more than football. In basketball, you can lose on any given night. You can lose on any day of the tournament. So Auburn's going to have to keep playing well. But, man, they look really, really good. And that game was over Saturday when the guy got hurt from Kentucky. The emotional energy may have been able to keep him in it. But once the guy went down for Kentucky, I think at the end of the first half, you just knew Auburn had way more horses down the stretch than Kentucky, and they were going to run away with that one at the end.
Jeremy, I appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today, my man. I hope you have a good rest of your week.
Thanks, Noah. Thanks, Jacob. Y'all take care.
That was Jeremy Law of Radio Alabama Sports with us here on the show to talk a little bit about Alabama as well as some things in relation to Auburn. Look, I got drug a year ago on Twitter. Alabama fans came after me. Do you know what that's like? That it's crazy.
It hurts.
Okay? I have had several SEC fan bases come after me for several different reasons. I've had A&M come after me. I've had Alabama come after me. That's how you know that you've said something that's really ruffled some feathers when you got multiple conference fan bases that come after you. And Alabama got mad at me a year ago because I said that it seemed like the needle had swung back in the direction of Alabama basketball, that it seemed like, you know, if you look at it, since Bruce Pearl got to Auburn, going up until last year, Auburn had edged Alabama in terms of program prestige, recruiting, having better seasons, more successful seasons. They were edging Alabama by every meaning of the word, 100%. The rivalry needle had swung in Auburn's direction. Don't talk to me about the past. I know Alabama has more all-time wins than Auburn. Whoop-de-doo, we're living in the present right here, right now. And aside from 1 year last year, Alabama has not edged Auburn, really, in the Bruce Pearl era. And so, to me, I think that the needle right now is swinging a little bit back in Auburn's favor. I think it's tight, but I do think that if you had a momentum bar right now, some of the momentum of the pendulum is swinging back in Auburn's direction with this season.
I would say it's just a little bit more than just moving. I think this thing is full swung back in Auburn's favor. But here's the great thing about it is next year, it could go all the way right back to Alabama. That's the great thing, and that's the era that we're living in of Auburn and Alabama basketball when it comes to Bruce Pearl and Nate Oates. Two of the greatest coaches in the country. I mean, realistically, especially Bruce Pearl and Nate Oates, he's right there. The two of the greatest coaches in the game of college basketball are coaching in the exact same state, recruiting in the same state, and that's what this rivalry has come to. Play, recruiting, and coaching. And so right now, it's all in Auburn's favor. Number one team in the country, going to be a number one seed in the tournament, and they're the favorite to win the national title. But next year, it could be Alabama, so it's just going to be so much fun to watch in the next few years.
Let's take a quick break here on the Line, and when we come back, we'll have What's On Tonight, as well as we'll continue to talk about Auburn football's coaching hires, or coaching decisions, rather, that they've made on the defensive side of the football. Stay tuned. More of On the Line coming up. Wrapping up hour number one of the Monday edition of On the Line. Big thank you there to Jeremy Law of Radio Alabama Sports for joining us in that previous segment. If you missed any of it, go and find the podcast wherever you get your podcast. Let's take a listen to what's on TV tonight before we get out of here for hour number one. Hey everybody, it's Noah Gardner with What's On Tonight. Two new episodes of Keenan gets things started at 7 on NBC. Following it at 8, it's a new episode of That's My Jam. New episodes of NCIS and NCIS Hawaii are on CBS starting at 8. Movie selections for tonight, the Harry Potter Marathon continues on Sci-Fi with the Deathly Hallows, Parts 1 and 2 starting at 5. In live sports, it's a big Monday in college basketball. Starting the action at 5 on ACC Network, Boston College is at Wake Forest. Moving to the 6 p.m. time slot on ESPN, Louisville is at Virginia. At 7 on ACC Network, Virginia Tech is at North Carolina. At 8, we've got a ranked matchup between number 18 Texas Tech and number 7 Kansas on ESPN. Fun Big East tilt at 8 as well, with St. John's at Seton Hall on FS1. Wrapping up the night on ESPN at 10, it's Arizona State at number 16 USC. The NBA schedule has just one game on NBA TV. The Utah Jazz are at the Phoenix Suns at 8. I'm Noah Gardner, and that's what's on TV tonight. About 4 minutes left in hour number one, and then we'll be back at 3 p.m. for all of hour number two. Call in 334-321-1390. Jacob Goins, his first day in the studio. Almost an hour in the books, my man. It's been a good time having you here.
It's been a blast, man. This is what I love to do. Be on air and talk about sports, and just every single day I get to start doing this. Man, what a blast. I'm so excited.
All right, let's go back to talk about Auburn's coaching moves on the defensive side of the football, and then in hour number two, we're going to talk a lot of Auburn basketball. Don't worry. We know that a lot of people are going to be tuning in from 3 to 4 p.m., getting off work and whatnot, going and picking up kids. We're going to talk about the real story coming up in an hour, but or a couple minutes or so in the second hour. But I do want to wrap up what's been going on with Auburn on the defensive side of the football with these coaching staff changes. And we left off with Jimmy Brunball, defensive line coach, and formerly an analyst 2 years ago. He was at Tennessee as a co-defensive coordinator, defensive line coach. You talk about his production at Tennessee in 2020, and we knew this coming into 2021, and they ended up producing like we thought. We knew this, like the good thing about Tennessee football coming into this year, we knew if it was going to be anything, it was going to be the defensive line. And that's because they held opposing teams in 2020 to 3.7 yards per carry. Everything else on Tennessee in 2020 was terrible, but not that defensive line. It was average in terms of getting sacks. They finished 7th in the SEC in sacks for the year, and they averaged about 5.5 tackles for loss per game, which is also average. But in terms of stopping the run, this was a good run-stopping unit, and they were young. They were not what they were this year. They were not a whole nother year of SEC development. I think Brumball's a good get from a development and teaching standpoint. Let's see what it looks like from everything else and how it fleshes out at Auburn.
I love him coming in to play or to be our defensive line coach, because here's the thing. Auburn's got some studs on the defensive line, and they've got guys coming back that are studs. So there's the Auburn defensive line is already good, but now it's going to get even better, especially with Brumball coming in. He knows what he's doing. He's proved that he can do it as a player and as a coach. I think he's going to be one of those coaches, players that we talked about earlier, where he's going to be loved by the guys and the guys are going to respond to him really well. And I think he's going to get the job done. I like it. I like him coming in. I think he's going to be great for the defense. He's going to be able to help out Schmetting as a defensive coordinator. And good things are going to come from this, in my opinion. I think it's going to happen really well.
The last move, and this is one that I don't have a super big opinion on because I just don't think we know as much about this individual, but Christian Robinson, the linebackers coach now, also will be the run game coordinator. So he's going to be playing a heavy hand in Auburn setting up to stop the run. I mean, he's coming from a place that has a good track record with linebackers. They put linebackers in the league. He's coming from Florida. That was his last stop. He's been there for the last 4 or 5 years, I believe. He was with some good defenses. He was also with some really bad defenses, right? But if you look back when the defense was at its peak, Florida was putting linebackers in the league when he was there. And so this could end up being really good. I think with the last two guys that we've mentioned, Jimmy Brumball and Christian Robinson, there's been some good with these guys. They've had some great players go on to play in the NFL. There's also been some average and some not so good. I'm not going to sit up here and say that it was a knockout for either of them, but I think they were good moves with where you're at right now in the coaching cycle.
When it comes down to that, it's just another thing we get to look forward to in year two and just see how it pans out, because like we've said, we don't really know. And especially with that hire, we just don't know what we're getting 100%. So we get to look forward to that in year two with Brian Harsin.
Both of these guys fit the 3-4 scheme. Christian Robinson, obviously, that's what Florida does. That's what Florida does in Gainesville. He is used to coaching that style on the defensive side of the football, and he's walking into a place that's got some pretty good linebackers. I'm really excited about the North Carolina transfer, Eugene Asante, coming in. I'm excited about what Auburn's got in the defensive room. I do not think defense will be the problem. So for everybody out there that may be uneasy about the turnover, I get it, but I do think there's so much talent on that side of the football. Who wouldn't want to coach defense at Auburn? At least next year, who wouldn't?
It's gonna be awesome, man. No doubt about it.
That's it for hour number one of the Monday edition of On the Line. We'll have hour number two coming up.
Live on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga, and in Auburn on ESPN 106.7, or online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. You are on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw. Join the show by calling in at 334-321-1390. Or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Hour number two of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. Number to call 334-321-1390. Phone lines are open. We want to hear from you. Noah Gardner, Jacob Goins with you. 1 hour already in the books for you, my man. It's been great to have you here today. People should call in. He's a new co-host on the show. It's a new era of On the Line. It's also his birthday. Happy birthday, man.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, people, call in, man. I want to hear from you guys. Let me know what's going on, and let me hear your takes, and let me see if I agree or not.
We're
going
to start off hour number two, as we do every day, with Making Headlines.
Making Headlines.
All right, starting off hour number two with Making Headlines. The first headline, we talked about this for the entirety of hour number one, so we are only going to talk about this for a brief moment. A summary statement on Auburn announcing a flurry of coaching hires for the defensive staff. A summary statement of your takeaways on that.
It's a good thing for Auburn. Auburn fans should not see this as a negative thing. It's not Brian Harsin just firing because he wants to. I think Brian Harsin's taking control. He's seeing some problems. He's handling it. And this is a good thing long-term for Auburn. So, Auburn fans, chill out, calm down. It's going to be okay. Brian Harsin knows what he's doing.
That's my takeaway, is if anybody claims to know what's going on or that there's disaster inside the program or anything like that, you don't know. Only the guys inside the program know, and it seems like there are more guys jumping on board than there are guys jumping off, right? You look at the recruiting class that he's put together. You look at the veterans deciding to return. Auburn in the transfer portal as well, I think, has done fairly good at this point, especially on the defensive side of the football. I think there's still some more to be desired on offense, of course, but I also don't think this coaching staff's going after guys that just for the sake of getting guys, right? That, like, I think they have to be a fit, personality-wise, culture-wise. They have to be what they're looking for. They're not just getting someone for the sake of bringing somebody in. I think this coaching staff is very particular with what they're looking for, and especially in terms of the coaching staff. And Auburn fans just aren't used to this. They're not. This was the most – people are forgetting so quickly. It's amazing to me how quickly people have forgotten that this was the most outside-of-the-box, not normal hire Auburn has ever done in the history of Auburn athletics.
Ever. I mean, literally.
They literally hired a guy from a blue turf.
That nobody had any idea. And no offense to Brian Harsin, but nobody from Auburn except some media knew who Brian Harsin was. Let's just be honest. I mean, they didn't.
I heard the hire and I was like, wait, the guy who coached at Arkansas State after Gus?
Yeah, exactly. So,
and I forgot that he was at Boise.
Exactly. People, it's okay, but I like it. He's doing what he wants to do, and we haven't had that at Auburn in a long time. So here's my thing before we move on from this. Listen to the players and see how the players are reacting to Harsin and what he's doing. People are buying in, they're coming back, and they like what he's doing at Auburn. They're not done, right? That's what they always say. So the players are coming back, they like what they see, and they want to be a part of it, and I think that speaks volumes for what's going on at Auburn.
Moving on to our second headline here, Auburn basketball dominated Kentucky in the second half to stay undefeated in SEC play. Auburn now up to 18-1 overall, 7-0 in the conference, the number one team in the country. They dropped Kentucky to 15-4, 5-2 in the conference. 80-71 was the win. Auburn had a 51-point second half against Kentucky, which is why I am not going to concede as much as some people have said this. And once again, Auburn is quickly, and I said this last week, or maybe even 2 weeks ago, Batman quote here, you either die a hero or you live long enough to become the villain. Auburn is becoming the villain in college basketball. There are a lot of folks out there hating on what Bruce Pearl has built. There's a lot of folks out there hating on this Auburn basketball team after the win over Kentucky. I mean, Fox Sports had a tweet that went up, and I'm not dogging Fox Sports here. I'm just saying a tweet goes up when Kentucky goes on like an 8-0 run. You go and look at the comments underneath it. Auburn's down by 8 in the first half with still a ton of basketball left to be played, and there are people saying Auburn fraudulent, you know? It's like, what? Are we serious? And then, of course, Auburn wins the game, and there are folks out there saying, well, Auburn wouldn't have won the game if Ty Washington hadn't gotten hurt.
Not that good of a win, you know. We didn't play Kentucky at full strength. Well, you know what? Auburn didn't play at full strength in the Elite Eight in 2019 because Chuma Okeke was hurt. So, and we still won. So that's all I got to say.
And you also break down what happened in the second half. Auburn, just talking about this game, instead of going back into the past, too, you talk about what happened in this game. Auburn dropped 51 points on Kentucky in the second half.
51, man.
I don't think that's all because of Ty Washington. You still had Oscar Tshiebwe, man. You got 51 points dropped on your head in the second half with Oscar Tshiebwe in your front court. And Sevier Wheeler, granted, Sevier Wheeler was in and out of the ball game too, but, you know, don't be pressing my man full court.
Yeah, you're right.
That's where screens come from. That's what happens.
Yep. Call it out, Tshiebwe. Yeah. If that's your job as the man back behind, when you see the screen coming to be set, you got to tell your teammate it's coming because, unfortunately, he never saw Walker Kessler, man. And Kessler posted up for 3 seconds and waited for him to run into him. And
who's to say he didn't call it out? Who's to say he didn't and how loud the environment was?
Yeah.
That stuff doesn't
–
that stuff, you don't hear some of that stuff.
Yeah, you're right. Also, I wanted to say thank you for the Dark Knight quote because that's awesome and I respect that extremely. I love it. But, yeah, I mean, 51 points in the second half or just any half of college basketball is – that's like what Gonzaga does to – San Francisco. You know what I mean? Like, that's not heard of in the SEC against Kentucky, one of the best teams in the SEC. So Auburn's on a roll, number one, well deserved.
Some takeaways from this game. We'll break that down here. I mean, it wasn't the best defensive effort from Auburn. They gave up Kentucky shooting 50% from the field, 41% or 42% rather from three. But I'll say from a fouling standpoint, they held it despite the fact that Kentucky only shot 12 threes. So they had, let's see, 46 twos to 12 threes. Auburn only fouled them, let's see, 12 times. They fouled them 12 times and only put them on the charity stripe for 10 free throws. So they only shot, you know, they only had five trips to the charity stripe, right? So, like, although Auburn was giving up a lot of buckets and did give up a decent amount of points here, still only gave up 71, which isn't horrendous. It's not great. It's not horrendous. But they didn't foul a whole lot. They didn't give away a lot of cheap buckets.
And look at the opposite side. Auburn shot 29 free throws in the game, and they made 24 of them. That's good for 83% almost. 24 points at the free throw line is, that's championship level basketball when you talk about how to win in college basketball. That's a 16-point differential just from the free throw line itself. I mean, that's huge. And the three-pointers weren't a huge factor for Auburn, but they were timely when they made them. Wendell Green, KD Johnson, those guys stepping up and making threes when they counted, but Auburn only had six of them, which, you know, Auburn's normally deadly from the three-point line, so it wasn't great. But the free throw line was huge for Auburn defensively and offensively.
You talk about the turnovers. Auburn didn't turn the ball over.
Yep. I mean, they had 12, which isn't bad, but look at their assists. They had 15 assists. Hey, the thing that won Auburn the game, they out-rebounded Kentucky. 27-26, they won the rebound battle. When Kentucky has a guy that averages 15 rebounds a game in Oscar Tshiebwe,
that's everybody else getting beat.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. That, and Auburn has had struggles early on crashing the boards on offense and defense, but they did it well enough on Saturday. And I'm telling you, rebounds and the free throw line won Auburn that game. And Jabari Smith. Because we have one of those, so.
And they don't. Exactly. That's right.
Exactly.
Taking a look at some other things that happened in this game, I thought Auburn down the stretch, you mentioned Jabari Smith's play. You got to have a bucket. You talk about the shot that he had on the double team. I mean, that you're right. We have one of them. They don't.
That's as good as it gets. That is NBA-level basketball, and it's unbelievable that – one, that Auburn's got a kid like that, and two, that there's a guy like that playing college basketball. Because if you go back to the LeBron James, Kobe Bryant days when you could go straight from high school to the NBA, this guy could do it right now.
And he'd be very highly sought after, and I think he is right now. You think he goes one?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. I mean, God forbid an injury or anything like that. If he keeps playing the way he is, and I think he's just going to get better, there's no doubt in my mind that he doesn't go up, that he does not go number one overall.
Did Kevin Durant go number one? I think he went number two, right? Or did he go lower than that?
Somebody, I'm not sure.
I don't think KD went number one.
Well, then who did? I don't know. That's a good question. Obviously, he came out of Texas.
He was the second overall draft pick by the Seattle Sonics.
Who went ahead of him?
Oh, man. I don't know. Let's see.
That's a good question. But Jabari Smith has those Kevin Durant
qualities.
Greg
Oden.
Greg. Dang.
Oh, Portland over here could have had Kevin Durant.
That's like whoever passed on Steph Curry, you know what I mean? Like when they did that. Brutal. But no, I've heard the Jabari Smith, Kevin Durant comparisons, and there's a lot of similarities. But I think Jabari Smith has the potential of a Giannis. I think he's got that style,
except
that
he can
body
shoot.
Style. Except he can shoot, yeah. It's almost like a mixture. But I think when Jabari goes to the NBA, remember when Giannis went to the league? He was that tall, scrawny kid that was just athletic. He couldn't shoot. But then he puts some muscle on. Could you imagine what Jabari Smith's going to do when he puts on 30 pounds of muscle? It's going to be unstoppable.
Also, potentially picks up some more ball handling, I think, as he goes to the next level. He's already got a good base, a good foundation. But I do think that can improve.
And you saw the play when he turned the ball over at midcourt. He got the rebound. And it looks like he just got ahead of himself. I mean, the dude's so athletic and so fast that – in that play where he fell down, and he fell on his wrist. And after that, he held his left wrist the entire rest of the game, if you noticed. And he could use some help, but, I mean, the dude's going to get there. And he's going to be the number one overall pick. He's the best player in college basketball. When you need a bucket, go to Jabari Smith.
Auburn now number one in the country, my friend.
War Eagle, man. That's all War I can Eagle. Say, War Eagle. I mean, enjoy it while it lasts, because I'm not saying it's going anywhere, but this is the first time in the history of Auburn basketball that they've got the number one by their name. And Bruce Pearl said it today. He said, this means something. He said, this means a lot for this program. Yes, it's just a ranking. Yes, it's just January. But being the number one team in the country is a big deal. And I think Bruce Pearl understands how big this is. But the players also understand stay humble, because number one teams lose all the time.
Did you expect it?
Yes. This week, I did. Last week, I actually did not expect to be number one last week.
I had a sneaky feeling that it was not going to happen.
I was okay. What, today?
No, last week.
Oh, okay. I expected last week to be number two, and I was okay with that. Be number two, go in, beat Kentucky on your home floor, and then take the number one ranking. So, yeah, I expected it. And if you look at Auburn's schedule, Missouri, Oklahoma, Alabama, Georgia, I mean, those are winnable games for Auburn. Oklahoma's good. Alabama can be good. And, I mean, Auburn doesn't have – they have one ranked team on their schedule at Tennessee. Other than that, I see Auburn rolling through the regular season.
That is our third headline here as Auburn comes in at number one in the AP Top 25. Auburn at number one, receiving 45 first-place votes. Gonzaga now drops to number two, receiving 15 first-place votes. So that slight – you know, you had, I think, nine different voters this week voted Auburn first place now. That bumped Auburn up, but you still look at it. You break down the point difference there. It's still close.
It is a total of
29 points separating these two teams in the rankings.
Well, the AP voter that had us at nine last week put us at five this week. So that also hurt our points.
Well, several teams that were in front of Auburn lost this past week. Villanova lost to an unranked team. Purdue lost to an unranked team.
I just don't understand, man. And I'm not calling anybody out, kind of. But how can you watch Auburn right now and take the fandom out of it? If you are watching Auburn basketball as a college basketball enthusiast, how can you not put them top three in the country? I mean, they're playing on a different level.
Yeah, at least top three. That's fair.
Top three.
Like, if you want to say Arizona or Gonzaga or Baylor even, I know Baylor's got two losses, but at their best, like teams like Baylor and Gonzaga, at their best, are they better than Auburn at their best? And I think if any matchup between those three teams would be an incredible game with all three of those teams playing their best, you're really splitting hairs there, right? But in terms of resume and deserving, that's how you decide who's number one in the AP Top 25 poll. I've read up on that voter's philosophy on how he ranks, and I disagree with it, and I don't think that's how the AP poll is intended to be voted in. So I disagree with the logic. I understand his logic. I just disagree with it.
I agree. Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. I mean, he has he has an AP vote we don't, which is, you know, credit to him. That's awesome. And you're allowed to have the way that you vote and the way that you rank the teams in your poll when you submit it to the AP. But I just don't see logically how you can have Auburn outside, like I said, the top three. If you want to debate the top three right now, that's okay, because Auburn still has some issues. Slow starts in the first half, they were down by double digits,
or again, blowing leads
or getting down early. Those two things are huge, and those are things that'll come back to bite Auburn if they don't fix them right now in the SEC. And if you want to look at those things, that's fine and that's understandable. But Auburn's a top three basketball team, no doubt. But hey, right now they're the number one team in the country.
And I think people get too bogged down by the number. Basketball, it's this way heavily, man. I mean, the soccer's gotten to a degree in this way, but like the minds in soccer haven't completely bogged down the way that they break down the game, the way that they view the game, as opposed to basketball. Basketball, it has annihilated the viewpoints of some people's minds. Like, it's radical in some ways how people view the game of basketball now, as they break it down to a possession by possession basis. And I'm like, look, if that's how you want to pick games, if that's how you like view teams and whatnot, and that's how you're analyzing that, I think that's fine when you're comparing two teams, right? Or you're trying to break down a game and how it's going to play out. But games aren't played on paper. And the reality is, I said this last week, what is happening in some AP ballots right now based off of analytics is like someone in school, you've got student A right here, right? Student A gets 90s their entire time in school, right? Like their entire semester, they get all 90s. Okay. They finish with a 90 in class, all right? The student B, okay, gets 94s his entire way, but bombs the last test and finishes with a lower grade than student A. That's like saying student B despite the fact that they did not finish with a higher average, that you ignore that completely and said that student had a better grade than the other student. That's exactly what people are doing. They're like, well, yep, that's not true. You have to look at every single result. And right now, Auburn has the best results resume in the country. It's not even close.
You got to look at the season as a whole. And my biggest thing when it comes to basketball specifically, when you rank a team or just tank, when you're just debating who's the better team, the eye test is the biggest.
It matters.
It matters.
There's a saying, fact is film.
Yep, There's no
doubt. Film is fact, excuse me.
Yeah, film is fact. I mean, how a team looks and how they play and whether they win or lose, it's their mentality, their emotion, their effort. Effort's a huge thing. Are they diving on the floor for loose balls, or are they just running, you know, are they just running up and down the floor for fun? And are they, do they have emotion? Do they have, are they, is there chemistry with the teammates and the coaches? And how do they play? Do they make shots? Do they, are they throwing up wild shots and just making them? Are they running smooth offense and defense? All of that is more important to me than numbers on a piece of paper on your tablet. So,
and is Auburn winning or not, right? Or is this team winning? And I think results have to matter. And to have had some of the teams that were ranked in front of Auburn and that are still ranked in front of Auburn with the resumes that they have, I think is ridiculous. That's not how the poll is designed. In my opinion, the poll is designed to rank these teams not only just on who you think are the best teams in the country, but also based on results and the current snapshot of where we are at in college basketball and what they've done up to that point. Because how else do we decide between these teams about what they've done? It's results. It's who about, they've beaten.
It's about right now, week 12. This is week 12 of the college basketball season. Who's the best team right now? It's the Auburn Tigers. And there's no debating it. I mean, I guess you could, but in my opinion, they're just right now, they're playing the best basketball as anybody is in the country. And I don't see that going anywhere anytime soon.
I think, look, Auburn's favored in every single game from here out. You look at the schedule, Auburn fans aren't going to want me to say this because they think I'm jinxing it, but I don't believe in jinxes. Look, Auburn very well could lose another game. I mean, that's normal for Auburn to for someone to lose in basketball. I mean, you look at Baylor, they had an upset-ridden week. USC had an 0-2 week. There was college basketball has been upset late in this year, as it is most years. You know, you think about John Rothstein and what he says in one of his famous tweets. He lists off something crazy that happens and says, is this anarchy?
Nope.
It's college basketball. And so Auburn's probably going to lose again. But Auburn should be favored in every game they play from here out, and I would not be shocked if Auburn didn't lose again because I think Auburn's that much better than everybody left on their schedule.
And we were talking about this before the show started, and I've been saying this for the last couple of weeks until this past weekend when I saw Auburn do what they did against Kentucky. I've been saying leading into what the next, how many more games? 15, 10, 15 maybe, that before Auburn gets to the SEC tournament, a loss is not going to hurt them. It benefits them. A road loss at Florida.
Or Arkansas.
Arkansas, Tennessee. A loss like that is not going to hurt Auburn in any way. It will in the polls, and that's okay. But it's not going to hurt Auburn mentally. It's going to be better for them. A loss like that lets you know and humbles you and says, okay, we're not this beatable monster in the NCAA. Like, we can be beat. So we have to show up and play our best game every single day. And a loss like that, going into the tournament is huge because Auburn, they're on how many games in a row now they won? Like 14, is that right? Something like that.
Something like that. 15, 14.
Yeah, and if they continue to do what they do, I mean, they could be on a 30-game win streak going into the tournament. That's a huge amount of pressure to take in to the NCAA tournament, the SEC tournament, and then the NCAA tournament where you can lose any day. So I think a loss doesn't kill Auburn. I'm not hoping they lose. But a loss doesn't
kill Auburn.
But
it alleviates some of the pressure maybe that
Absolutely.
Could be generated
yeah.
as you keep winning.
Absolutely. So, again, not cheering for an Auburn basketball loss, but a road loss on the SEC, not a big deal.
I'll tell you, the SEC team that I'm afraid of most right now is Arkansas.
They're good. Mississippi State is really good. People are underestimating them.
Yeah.
We have Auburn has a road game Wednesday, March 2nd at Mississippi State night game. Watch out for that. That could be a game that Auburn drops as well.
I'm concerned about Arkansas because now they figured it out. We knew how talented they were, and it was only a matter of time before they started gelling and before they started winning.
I started last year.
Yeah, and look, like they lost a ton off of last year's team, and then they brought in a ton of new transfers, and you knew. I was like, well, this team's really good. They're going to be really good. They just haven't figured it out yet. Started out 0-3 in conference play. They figured it out a couple of weeks ago, and they're running through some teams. Now, they just beat Texas A&M, dropped Texas A&M two more losses than they had coming into this week. A&M's a good basketball team. They hung with Kentucky. This is an Arkansas team that, over the last four games, has beaten LSU and A&M. And that win over LSU was extremely impressive. This is a team that is playing some really good basketball right now. And you look at the future of their schedule, it gets pretty tough across the last five games or so. But over this next stretch of four, five, six games for them, they're all winnable. And this Arkansas team, when they get Auburn at home, I'm just telling you, they're good enough.
They're dangerous. They've got four games before Auburn comes to town. They got Ole Miss, West Virginia, and the SEC Big 12 Challenge. at Georgia, and then a Mississippi State game before Auburn comes in. And I agree, man. Arkansas is good. The SEC, they may not be all ranked, and they may not all be getting the national attention that they should, but they're good. And if you look at Joe Lunardi's updated bracketology, three of the four teams that are the last four or first four out are SEC teams, and two of the teams that are the last four in are also SEC teams.
It's cannibalized itself in a way this year. I mean, yep. I don't think it's lived up to quite the expectations that it had, but it's hard to because there were high expectations for this league, and it cannibalized itself. A brief look through the top 25 here before we go to break. Number one, Auburn, of course. Number two, Gonzaga. Three, Arizona. Arizona is taking up a first-place vote out there. Four, Baylor. Five, Kansas. They have a big game tonight against Texas Tech on ESPN at 8 o'clock. Six, Purdue. Seven, UCLA. Also tied at seven, Houston. Nine, Duke. 10, Michigan State. 11, Wisconsin. 12, Kentucky. They don't move. 13, Texas Tech. 14, Villanova. 15, USC. 16, Ohio State. 17, Providence. 18, Tennessee. I still think that's too high for Tennessee. I'm not a believer in the Vols.
I agree.
19, LSU. I definitely don't believe in them either after everything that has happened to them over the last couple of weeks. 20, Connecticut. 21, Xavier. 22, Marquette. 23, Iowa State. 24, Illinois. And 25, Davidson. Alabama receiving votes. They're at 27. BYU right out there on the cusp at 26. That's a look at the AP Top 25. We'll take a break here on the Line. Back on the Line, Noah Gardner and Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Coming up in about 4 minutes, we're going to have Jacob Hillman, Auburn Jungle president, with us here on the show. Time for Best of the Weekend. We do this every Monday. Jacob, it's your birthday. I'm going to let you go, man. Best of the Weekend.
Best of the Weekend. I mean, sports as a whole, but the NFL playoffs, man. I mean, what a weekend. All four divisional round games ended on the last play of the game. How cool is that, man? That's awesome.
Of course, that's going to bring up every NFL postseason when there's overtime. Complaints about overtime. Your take on overtime right now, not just in the professional level. I want collegiate level as well. I want your take on each one.
Okay, so in the NFL, fix it because it's terrible. And
what's wrong with it?
Well, here's the problem. With the game, of course, we're talking about Buffalo Bills, Kansas City Chiefs, one of the greatest postseason games we've ever seen. And I will die on that hill because it was amazing. Here's the problem. Those two teams were playing so good, and they went to overtime, and one team didn't even get to touch the ball. Josh Allen, one of the best quarterbacks in the league right now, didn't even touch the ball in overtime. That's the problem. The NFL has got to fix it to where both teams get a chance in overtime. It's based off a coin flip, and it's been that way for years, and it's terrible. And I understand but the Bills should have played better defense, quote-unquote. But, I mean, we talked about it earlier. Go back to 2011 when Tim Tebow and the Denver Broncos played the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they won on the very first play of the game in overtime to Demaryius Thomas, 80 yards, game over. And it's the same thing. So the NFL overtime has got to be fixed to where both teams get a chance to touch the football, have a chance to win with a touchdown or a field goal. But both teams have to touch the ball. When it comes to college ball, I kind of like where it's at. I don't like the changes that they made recently, whereas they're trying to shorten the game, I guess. But now once it gets to, what, the third overtime, you have to start – or second overtime, you have to start going for two and then third or
well,
fourth
it's the
overtime.
Third, it's the third overtime where – Well, I guess, yeah, the second overtime, you have to do the two-point conversion, but it's the third and fourth where it's the shootout.
It's just a shootout of two-point conversions, which that doesn't prove who's the better team at the end of the day. Like,
also think they're taking entirely too long to play that out because you have to switch sides every time, and then they get a break in between. It's like, yo, man, we're literally just doing a play here. Like, chill out. I mean, yep. The Penn State-Illinois game made my eyes hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, that was bad football.
There's no doubt. And so the overtime breakdown, NFL, both teams got to have a chance to touch the football. In the college, a two-point conversion doesn't decide who's the better team. That's got to change. And I think just go up and down the field or, you know, a kicker shootout, something like that. I don't know. But that's got to change as well because a two-point conversion doesn't decide who's the better team.
My take on the NFL, why do people want to end the game quicker? Why would you want to have ended last night's game quicker? You've got all the eyeballs on your product.
I would have watched that game all night long. If it would have gone on until 1 o'clock in the morning, I would have watched it. because I think it could have. I saw a picture, and it was, if they let it go, final score would have been 150 to 148. You know what I mean? So NFL's got to fix their overtime. So does college.
And then college, it wasn't broken to begin with. The LSU-Texas A&M game was awesome. Why were we trying to prevent that from happening again? Not here for it.
Stay on the line. More of the show when we come back.
Back on the line. Noah Gardner and Jacob Goins with you on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. On the line with us now, Jacob Hillman. Don't get it confused. Jacob Hillman, Auburn Jungle president with us. Jacob, back from Jungle City. How's it going?
Man, it's awesome. Obviously, the entire Auburn family is just on top of the world right now, as the Auburn men's basketball team is as well, ranked number one in the country. And man, what a weekend it was.
Of course, Jacob, when did you get out there? Because I know you were doing a Lee Scott basketball game. You were doing play-by-play for Lee Scott basketball on Friday night, and then you got done with that. So take me through Jungle City. Is that what we're calling it now? Bruce Pearl called it that, so I figured that was overriding Pearlville, which I like Jungle City better.
Yeah, I like Pearlville being what the first experience was, but now from now on is Jungle City, as Coach Pearl said, post-game and on Monday, so today. And when I got out there, it was probably between 10 and 11 o'clock. I was giving a care package off to some of my friends, and man, it was crazy. It was rocking out there, and from what I was told, it was rocking till probably about 2 a.m., and then that's when everyone became kind of, okay, we're in this for the long run, and things are going to go down. But when I was out there, body get a chance going on. Food was being tossed out. I mean, the amount of food that was delivered to Jungle City was unreal. And I think it was more than was necessary, but nonetheless, I kept getting delivered. And it was a crazy time and something that I really did not expect.
So looking at the direction that this Auburn program has gone from a fan support, it feels like it hit its crescendo right this past weekend. But what is your take to be able to continue momentum like this and the potential that there could be more Jungle Cities in the future?
Yeah, of course. I mean, there's only one other school in the country that does something like that at Duke, and obviously that's Kayville, and that is a huge deal for what Duke does, and for Auburn. It's obviously it's easy to build fan support when the team's winning, but to continue something like this where everyone loves it and is just dying to get inside Auburn Arena, look at Auburn Twitter. Look at how much fun it is just going on there, posting memes, and just talking about Auburn basketball day in and day out, whether there's a game that day or not. I mean, I think that's part of it, because you want to be a part of that fun, and really it's just building up the hype and really just how fun it is to watch this team and really build it up. And, I mean, I think, like you said, it's built up as much as it's ever been. So to continue this momentum, I think it's just to keep encouraging those that maybe didn't get it to the Kentucky game to show up for Oklahoma, for Alabama, Ole Miss and Vanderbilt in the middle of February, and obviously in the year with the South Carolina game. There's plenty of other opportunities to show up if you didn't get to go to the Kentucky game.
Jacob Hillman, good to talk to you, my friend. As the AU Jungle president and the committee that you guys have, people don't really understand, I don't think, to the extent of the amount of work that you guys put in to get the Jungle ready for an Auburn basketball game. Walk us through what you as the president, the vice president, and then the committee of the Jungle, what is your game day routine and preparation work to get the Jungle students ready for Auburn basketball?
Yeah, it's good to hear you on the phone today, Jacob, and I guess I'll hear you from now on as well. But on a game day, no, I'll go with a Saturday's game, just kind of go through that itinerary. And really, we all showed up at 9 o'clock, passed out breakfast with the women's basketball team to Jungle City, and that was a lot of fun because they were obviously all ready to get in. They were let in 30 minutes early, so they were 1 hour away from being let inside. So the anticipation was building, and they were excited, and it was fun to do that with the women's basketball team. After that, we were making sure all the shirts were out for the first 500 students that entered, had shakers ready, and and that's really just the game day part, especially. And then once we get closer to game time, anthem happens, and we have the jungle banner ready, and we do that as well. And then from there, it's just bringing as much energy to the game as possible. But the game day, the game day responsibilities are a little bit less than what we do. Obviously, we have our weekly meetings where we meet with Dan Heck, the director of marketing here, and just make sure that we keep his finger on the pulse of the Auburn students, because obviously he's not a student. So the best way for him to know what the best possible game day experience is to talk to students. And that's kind of our goal whenever we have those weekly meetings, is to really give him a good idea of what we and the rest of the student body wants.
So what type of role and what type of relationship has it been like with Bruce Pearl this year? And because we've seen what he's done to sell this program, we've seen what he's done to build up fan support. What role still is he playing in all this, and how close is he to what you guys do?
Well, yeah, I mean, as you said, he's calling it Jungle City. It's not Pearlville. It's Jungle City. And that really tells you all you need to know, is that he's all in on letting this be an Auburn thing. This isn't about him. This is about the jungle. It's about the alumni. It's about what the fan support has done, because before Auburn was the best team in the country, I would say we had the best student section in the country, and that's something that we want to continue, and we've had for a while. So I really love what Coach Pearl has done, and he's really bought into what our ideas and visions are of the jungle, and he makes sure to support us and really give us anything that we want. If we ask where Tiger Walk's going to be on a road trip, he gives us those details, and he really loves doing things like that.
So, Hillman, let me talk to you about your from your basketball IQ standpoint. What is your ceiling and floor for this Auburn basketball team as now? They're the number one team in the country. Give me your ceiling and the floor for this year's Auburn basketball team as they stand right now.
Yeah, I mean, right away, I'll say the ceiling is obviously is a national championship.
Absolutely.
There's no doubt that this team has the capability to go on and win the national championship in New Orleans. When it comes to a floor, man, I mean, it's hard to say, because I think it's a lot. The team's going to make the tournament, I would have to say, like, around a 32 exit, I think that there's a chance that you meet up with an 8-9 team that might have been underrated. You don't play your best game against them, and you're not going to get a win there. So I think that's kind of the floors, an 8-9 team upsetting them in the round of 32, assuming Auburn gets a 1 seed. I really find it hard to believe Auburn's going to lose more than two more games in SEC play. I think that's what's going to happen. I think Auburn will lose two games in SEC play and go in the SEC tournament, at least make the semifinals and maybe probably the championship, and that's good enough for a 1 seed. So,
man,
that's where I see the four as.
I know you so well. We're good friends, and I know that you are a pragmatic person. You are a realist, and I know you try and, in your mind, set things a little bit lower than where you would actually like to see it. I'm having a hard time believing Auburn's going to lose two more games, man.
Well, yeah, and look, that's where I look at it from the fact of you never know. Auburn could go in tomorrow and lose to Missouri. Auburn struggled in Missouri, and then you've got other road games. It's just, what are the chances of you going one loss in SEC play? Now, with that being said,
believe
that this team is special. Now, that's where I'll say I expect a loss or two the rest of the way, but, man, I mean, this team is just continuing to prove everyone wrong, and I could see them proving everyone wrong and running the table the rest of the SEC play, or only getting one loss, because, I mean, just look at the schedule. I think the toughest game is that at Tennessee game. I'll say a sneaky game is Texas A&M coming to Auburn. Now, obviously, with it being in the jungle, it's hard for me to say. I mean, I'm not picking against Auburn in the jungle until they lose. So I don't see that being a loss, but I do think that's a sneaky game, whereas like the at Tennessee game, I could see that being a loss.
Or at Arkansas, they're playing really good right now also. But
four in a row.
You know, but but that was a lot better than where they were at, you know, and they beat some good teams down that stretch. And Bud Walton Arena is one of the toughest places to play in the entire SEC. I want to say this, though, too. We talked a week ago about the Auburn Ole Miss game, you know, and I said to you, and you responded the exact same way, you never feel uncomfortable with this team. Even when they're down double digits, you always think they're going to come back. Like, even though it is, and I said this earlier, so I do agree with you. I think Auburn's going to lose another game this year at some point before they get to tournament time, more than likely. But, like, internally, it really doesn't feel like they should or that they can. They're that good. It's wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, and what I'll say is I can't tell you what game it's going to be. I just think there's going to be a game where Auburn comes out flat and they don't recover. I think in the Kentucky game, Auburn came out flat, but then you saw what happened in the second half, and it didn't matter because Devin Cambridge had a huge dunk and the roof popped off the place. And from there, I don't think a single person in that building thought Auburn could lose. And things like that just continue to happen, whether it's in Auburn Arena or on the road. Like when Wendell Green hit that three against Ole Miss and take the lead, I don't think anyone thought Auburn was going to lose that game at that point. So it's just things like that that keep happening, and you just don't ever doubt this team. And like I said, like you and I said, they're going to lose another game, but who knows what it will be.
Last question here, too, before we let you get out of here. Bruce Pearl earlier talked about how this team still has a lot of work to do. He's still trying to find ways to motivate this team. Auburn's now number one. How do you motivate Auburn this week?
Yeah, this week it's got to be about just proving yourself as number one. You kind of did that last week, but I think to the extent now, literally every team is looking behind you, and you want to make sure that you continue that and really just impose yourself as a number one team. You're not just trying to get there. You're trying to continue it. And, you know, a 15-game winning streak, that's something that is really impressive and not a lot of teams do. And I think that Auburn has a chance to keep that up, and they definitely want to. This team is motivated, and I don't think there's much that it takes because, I mean, like we said, I think last week we also talked about how the motivation factor. I don't think that's an issue with this team whatsoever between Coach Pearl or the players. It is locked in. They are locked in, ready to play every single game, and they want to win a national championship.
Jacob, we appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today. Tell everybody where they can keep up with you.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at Jacob Hillman AU, and follow all the Jungle accounts at AU Jungle, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook.
I appreciate it, my man. I hope you have a good rest of your week. I look forward to seeing you soon.
Yep, you too as well.
That was Jacob Hillman, Auburn Jungle president, here with us on the Monday edition of the show. This team does still have a lot of work to do, but talking about motivation with this team, well, I'm going to be real. I don't think it's going to be that hard to keep them motivated. Bruce Pearl's already great at doing something like that, but here's the reality. This is the first week Auburn's ever been ranked number one. You just got here. Why are we trying to leave the party, man? Let's stick around for a little while.
Enjoy the moment, man. Live in it, because embrace it. You're the number one team in the country. Come out and play like it, and I think they will, man. Motivation's not going to be a problem with this team. I talked about this earlier. The problem with this team, this is not a bad thing, but the problem with this team is going to be able to convince them all season long that somebody could beat them. Because if they have the mentality that nobody can beat them, then you won't bring your A game every day. And you play in the SEC, and if you don't bring your A game, you're going to get beat, especially on the road. So the mentality for this team is that right now they probably feel like nobody can beat them, but you got to let them know, humble them a little bit, so they play their best game every day.
And I think that's what Bruce Pearl's trying to do right now, because I just saw a quote from front of the program, Christian Clemente. He's on the show with us every week, and we'll have him on later on this week, as we always do. But I saw him tweet out a quote from Bruce Pearl saying, there's a lot of work to do. I mean, there's a reason why Kentucky was up double digits on us at one point. And I think that's a true statement. And I've said this for weeks, and I don't want people to take it wrong. I genuinely am enjoying this basketball team, and I think they can win a national championship. This team, out of any Auburn team in the past, can win a national championship. But if it's something that's never been done at Auburn before, and it's something that a select group of teams in college basketball do on a regular basis, and it's so hard for – there's just a limited amount – it's a very limited club. It's hard to win a basketball national championship. And for Auburn to do it, it's going to take them doing stuff that they've never done before. And this team can do it, but there is still work to be done, and this team's not perfect. And I think right now they're in a great spot, but they do have to continue to improve, and there are things that they can continue to work on. And that's why I stress that with this team. I demand more of this team because I know they're capable.
This is the best we've ever felt about an Auburn basketball team near the end of January, ever. Because Even with the Final Four team, they went through a bad stretch in February, a bad stretch. Like February, early March, they did not play good at all. But this is the best we've ever seen an Auburn team play, and this is the best we've ever felt about an Auburn team. But there's no doubt that there's work to be done.
I don't even think they played a complete game on Saturday. I thought that they played a I thought they played a really good second half. You can't deny that.
Yeah, 51 points.
Yeah. Boom. But the first half was not that good by any means. And although Auburn still shot around 50% in the first half, they were trailing behind in the turnover department. That it was turnover late in first half. It wasn't as much in the second half. It was in the first half. I don't think defense was as good. I mean, they were poor shot selection at times. It looked like the moment had maybe gotten to them a little bit in the first half. But they finally settled in and stopped forcing the issue, and they just played ball. And we saw what this team looks like when they play ball, right? But the first half, they definitely got, I think, caught up in the moment and whatnot. I'm still looking for this team, and I know you said this earlier, I'm still looking for this team to put together a consistent run of games where they're playing a full 40 minutes, where they're not letting other teams back into it, or they're not starting flat.
Auburn has not played a good 40 minutes all season long.
A complete 40 minutes, I think we should say.
And I'm saying a good 40 minutes. A complete 40 minutes, but a good 40 minutes. I've not seen Auburn play that yet, but when they do, there is literally nobody in the country that's going to be able to stop them. I hope it hits them at the right time. Early March will be a perfect time for them to start that. And if that happens, it's over.
And to be fair, and I know you're not criticizing the team here.
No,
this
not
is
at
the
all.
Reality of it. Nobody's playing that right now. Mm-hmm. If anybody, Auburn's the closest to doing that right now in college basketball.
Exactly.
But the reality is somebody in college basketball is going to hit that mark at some point this year. That team's going to win the national championship. You better hope it's Auburn, because, and I know Bruce is recruiting great, Auburn just doesn't recruit classes like this, doesn't recruit teams like this on a regular basis. They're not Duke. Now, they can continue to build and escalate the program and have great teams, but teams like this don't come around that often. So enjoy it. We are enjoying it, but it's also rational to say, look, this team does need to hit another level before they win the national championship.
Because the tournament is another animal. The regular season's one thing, and the SEC conference tournament's a thing, but once March Madness hits, that's a whole different ballgame. And you got to be playing your best game for 40 minutes, and if you don't, you're not going to win. You're going to go home.
Or there's a chance someone might, that's a lot worse than you, could snatch you.
And then, there's nothing worse than that.
Yeah.
A first or second round exit with a team that has the best odds to win the national championship right now, that's not what you're looking for. That's a bad season if that happens. So nothing against Auburn. They're playing the best basketball in the country, but I still think there's more left in the tank. They're going to get even better as the season goes on.
Wrapping up the Monday edition of On the Line, Noah Gardner, Jacob Goins with you. Big thank you to Jacob Hillman, Auburn Jungle president, one of the leaders of Jungle City, was with us in that previous segment. Let's take a listen to what's on TV tonight. Hey, everybody. It's Noah Gardner with What's On Tonight. Two new episodes of Keenan gets things started at 7 on NBC. Following it at 8, it's a new episode of That's My Jam. New episodes of NCIS and NCIS Hawaii are on CBS starting at 8. Movie selections for tonight, the Harry Potter marathon continues on Sci-Fi with the Deathly Hallows, parts 1 and 2 starting at 5. In live sports, it's a big Monday in college basketball. Starting the action at 5 on ACC Network, Boston College is at Wake Forest. Moving to the 6 p.m. time slot on ESPN, Louisville is at Virginia. At 7 on ACC Network, Virginia Tech is at North Carolina. At 8, we've got a ranked matchup between number 18 Texas Tech and number 7 Kansas on ESPN. Fun Big East tilt at 8 as well, with St. John's at Seton Hall on FS1. Wrapping up the night on ESPN at 10, it's Arizona State at number 16 USC. The NBA schedule has just one game on NBA TV. The Utah Jazz are at the Phoenix Suns at 8. I'm Noah Gardner, and that's what's on TV tonight. Back on the Line on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. We've got about 2 minutes left in the show, almost time for Final Take. But before we get to that, final thoughts on Auburn, Kentucky, Auburn being ranked number 1 in the nation.
They had a slow start, obviously, in the first half. Second half, they came out, put 51 points on an SEC team. That's the second best
SEC team at that.
Exactly. That's just unheard of. On a team who put 107 points on the best team, the second best defensive team in college basketball, the Tennessee Volunteers. So Auburn coming back and winning that game by 9 points, I mean, that just shows their dominance. They're just better than everybody else. They have more talent, more skill, and more knowledge on the floor, and they've got the best head coach in college basketball, Bruce Pearl.
It's time for Final Take. Final Take. All right, Jacob, our first Final Take together, my man. Ramping up your first ever show here on ESPN 106.7 at Fox Sports Central Alabama. I got about a minute and a half left. Our final take today, Auburn football. It's not time to panic, and I've been talking about this a lot. But all of the staff changes that people saw over the weekend, right before the Kentucky game. I think it's just a sign of a culture shift at Auburn and relationships, maybe not panning out the way that folks thought it was going to, but I also think they achieved what they set out to achieve with their defensive coaching staff this past year. Built relationships in the Southeast. They made the defense better. Derek Mason achieved some good things here at Auburn, as well as some of the other guys on the staff. I don't think it's time to panic that there's some turnover. This is just another step in Brian Harsin building what he wants to build here at Auburn.
This is Brian Harsin taking control of a program, and this is what it's going to take to win in the SEC and to win in the state of Alabama by itself. Brian Harsin is doing what he needs to do to build a program to compete on the national level. So having turnover in the coaching change on defense, it's okay. And Auburn fans, it's going to be all right. This is a good thing because he wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't. He's not firing guys to do it. He's doing it to make Auburn better. He loves Auburn. He's an Auburn man. And he's doing what he's got to do to put Auburn back on the national stage.
On top of that, look, the experiment's just getting started. It's not time to kill it yet.
Absolutely.
People are just going to have to let it ride, man. We're not used to anything like this. Jacob, hope you have a good rest of your night, my man.
Thanks, you too, man. Appreciate it.
That's it for another edition of On the Line. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Same time, same place. You know where to find us.